Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. This is Nick Wright. Chris Canty is in for Chris Carter this
still
morning.
Still got CC sitting across from you.
Yes, yeah, still do. Good. You're right.
And not to derail the show, but I don't make many requests of you, Jenna Wolf. Okay. I made one at the table.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Show.
This is Chris Canty filling in for Chris Carter. This is the most annoying human on the planet.
No.
Nick. No.
The most annoying sports broadcaster
of 2019.
Are you proud of that title, though? I saw you had it framed yesterday.
I mean,
is he proud of it?
Did you really put it next to
the Chris Carter
Hall of Fame enshrinement picture?
Man, listen, 64 entered, only one could leave champion.
Wow.
You're sitting across from him.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm going to hold that title. Thank you, Jenna Wolf, for getting the honorific correct.
Got that. And with that, talk about our big show today. The New York Giants just might trade up for Kyler Murray. We'll tell you why we're saying that. The Warriors are gearing up for a three-peat, but we will start with the Los Angeles Lakers. Now that general manager Rob Pelinka was reportedly given Jeannie Buss's blessing to stay on, one of his first tasks will be to land a big free agent. Due to Pelinka's maneuvering, they are armed with a max salary cap slot, but they also have a coach who has underwhelmed, a team that has not made the playoffs in six seasons, and a recently injured LeBron James. Yesterday, NBA insider Rick Bucher was on Undisputed and gave some insight into the Lakers' interesting free agency plans.
I don't believe that this is Rob Pelinka's job and away we go. The referendum on Rob Pelinka will be this summer, and the big fish that Jeannie Buss wants is Kawhi Leonard.
Really?
If they get Kawhi Leonard, then I think that Rob, yes, has more power, he controls.
Nick, we have discussed all the potential free agents out there and who would be the best fit for this team. Should Kawhi Leonard be the Lakers' top priority?
I think he should for a number of reasons. And we'll get to the Rob Pelinka part of this. It's somewhat illogical to me that if you want Kawhi Leonard, then you should maybe try to go get Masai Ujiri. But I know we'll talk about the Pelinka and the Lakers
who
front office.
Who is with the Raptors
who
right
is
now.
With the Raptors right yep. now and part of the trade that got Kawhi Leonard there. But we can talk about that later in the show. Here's why I think Kawhi should be their top target and not the better player who's available in Kevin Durant. Mm. Kevin Durant is not a even plausibly realistic target. Let's say you have a 25% chance at Kawhi Leonard. You don't lessen your chance at Kawhi for a 1% chance at Kevin Durant. Now, if it were close, then maybe you would. Kawhi Leonard fits perfectly with LeBron. LeBron would not have to change his style of play one bit. And I disagree with our friend Chris Broussard. I disagree with the people saying the next phase of LeBron, he needs to play off the ball more. He needs to play more of a traditional small forward. Mm-hmm. Let's see LeBron play a different style. Let's see him be ineffective at the style he's always played before we change his style. Kawhi Leonard doesn't need the ball in his hands. He is the league's best perimeter defender. We know his style would fit beautifully next to LeBron, and you instantly add another top five player. Like, he's a tier one free agent that wants to come to Los Angeles. You are competing with at most two teams for Kawhi Leonard, Chris Canty.
Yep.
The Toronto Raptors and the Los Angeles Clippers. And the Raptors, it might just be, do I want to stay or do I want to go? And if he wants to go, then it's Lakers versus Clippers. He will only be going to go to Los Angeles, so you have a realistic shot at him, and he's the best of the realistic options.
Well, no, I agree with you, and I think it's important for the Lakers to do their due diligence on all the free agents, but especially Kawhi, because we know that, you know, he would want to be interested in going back to Southern California. That's where he's from. And so, yeah, I think it is a situation where he's either going to stay in Toronto or he's going to go to the Clippers. But that doesn't stop the Lakers from trying to make a push and try to get Kawhi to come join them. Now, in listening to Kawhi Leonard when he was on Serge Ibaka's YouTube channel, How Hungry Are You?, he was very noncommittal about staying in Toronto. And so if you're the Los Angeles Lakers, maybe that becomes a real possibility. But if you're Kawhi Leonard, why would you want to go to the Lakers? it seems like you would want to go to the more functional of the two L.A. basketball franchises, which would be the Los Angeles Clippers, run by Jerry West. And, oh, by the way, you have a championship-level coach in Doc Rivers. To me, that makes more sense. With what's been going on with the Lakers and all the dysfunction that was, and then, of course, LeBron James dealing with the injuries that he did in the 2018-2019 season, there are some serious question marks that are going on right now with the Lakers.
So if you're the Lakers, Nick, what's your sales pitch then to Kawhi? Because everything Canty laid out is true. It seems like the Clippers are the more viable, the better, the more attractive option right now, less dysfunction.
Well, less dysfunction, definitely true, but maybe only temporarily true. And that's why it is very difficult to talk about the free agent part without talking about the front office and the coaching part. Because you mentioned Jerry West. I said the Lakers should target Masai Ujiri. They also should target Jerry West, not to get them both, but to see if they can get him over from the Clippers.
But
they
if you're Jerry West, do you want to be one of those executives that inherits somebody else that's on your staff that's not necessarily your guy? Because it seems like that would be the situation with Rob Pelinka in the Lakers front office.
So I don't want to get too in the weeds on this because I know that we're going to be discussing the front office part of it. But you can remove so much of the negatives when it comes to why a free agent wouldn't want to go there if you get the right basketball president and you let him make the decision on your coach and your general manager. It would be an added bonus if you weaken the Raptors or if you weaken the Clippers when you are pursuing a guy who would be considering the Raptors or the Clippers. But this, to me, when people say the Clippers are just obviously a better situation, what the Clippers don't have is an all-star. Mm. What the Lakers have is the best player in the world. And even if you don't think he's the best player in the world anymore, one of the five best players in the world.
Sure.
What the Lakers do have is a young core that you can either flip for something or that you would hope the new coach, if there is a new coach, can develop. They also are the Lakers compared to the Clippers. And that might not matter to a lot of people nationally. But in L.A., man, I lived in L.A. briefly when the Clippers were excellent and when the Lakers were terrible. And if you walked into this was post-Kobe Lakers, by the way. Mm-hmm. You walk into any sports bar, the Laker game is on. The Clipper game is not on. You drive on the 405. It is Laker logos, no Clipper logos. Now, maybe Kawhi doesn't care about that. Maybe he is a superstar that actually is more attracted with the more under-the-radar team. I don't know if that's the case, but I do know that the Lakers should not say, well, you know, what's our real shot at a guy when he has made it clear if he leaves Toronto, Los Angeles is the place he wants to go. Of the free agents, Kawhi 1A, Kyrie 1B for the Lakers' realistic targets, to me, it's very clear that's how it should go.
So you mentioned that the Clippers don't even have a big star and the Lakers do. The Clippers made the playoffs without even trying. The Lakers only wanted to make the playoffs and couldn't with the superstar. If you're the Lakers, do you think they even have a legit shot to land a guy like Kawhi Leonard?
Well, I think they have an opportunity because you do have LeBron James. He's the best player in the world. But one thing that another superstar has to understand with joining LeBron, it won't be LeBron James' fault if this team can't get into the postseason or can't compete for a championship. It'll be whatever else is going on around LeBron.
Whether or the guy they brought
Whether it's
in.
The head coach, whether it's the free agent that they signed this offseason, whether it's the young guys not developing, it will always be on somebody else. And I think that's in part why Magic Johnson decided to step away from this situation, because he recognized he wasn't going to be able to make the moves that would be necessary in order to move this franchise forward. He had a vision for it, and then, of course, I think Jeannie Buss stepped in and said, we're not willing to part ways with Rob Pelinka and or Luke Walton, and that was a decision that Magic had to make. But in looking at the situation, if you're a free agent, why would you want to step into a situation where you would get all the blame if the situation fails?
Because to me, there is that narrative that everyone gets blamed but LeBron, and I know it gets said a lot, but LeBron is also the most criticized of all our superstar athletes over the last, 15 years. So it's not like LeBron skirts by. But that is the downside of teaming with LeBron, if it is true. You know what the upside is? Dwayne Wade just had a year-long farewell tour where everyone acknowledged this is one of the 20 greatest basketball players ever. Mm-hmm. That does not happen. He's a great player in the Hall of Famer without LeBron. He is not the Pantheon guy without those four trips to the finals, those two extra championships. Kyrie Irving actually skirted from almost all criticism while he played with LeBron, only faced it once he went to Boston, tried to do it on his own. Kyrie Irving, we know, is a finals-tested champion because he played alongside LeBron James. The upside is oh, you can win titles and elevate your standing within the league enormously. That is the sell is not if it goes wrong, how bad will it be? It's if it goes well, how great will it be? And your point about the Lakers this year being a disaster, it's a totally fair one. The Clippers this year being one of the most overachieving teams in the league, that's a totally fair one as well. Despite that, the Clippers were a really good story a few years ago. And then all of a sudden, they couldn't get over the hump, and everybody left. I don't know if the Clippers are a team, maybe Kawhi's different, people look to as this team's going, is this team going to be a champion, or is this team going to be an overachieving good story? I think people can see the Lakers being champions.
All right, well, there was news on Rob Pelinka and Luke Walton. We'll talk about that coming up a little bit later. We'll switch gears on the other side. Brett Favre chimes in on the drama surrounding Aaron Rodgers. That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We're back right after this. Welcome back. All right, we'll talk some Aaron Rodgers in a second. But first, Team USA Junior Basketball. Wow. Check out Isaac Okoro with the alley-oop. He's heading to Auburn.
It's a nice little out-of-bounds play, baseline out-of-bounds, coming up from the top of the key, booming on folks.
Yeah, that's, Bruce all, Pearl that's got, all bad right there. If you're the guy standing under the rim, that's all bad.
Some even younger players. Oh, no-look pass for the easy lay-in. Getting started early.
Just a little extra sauce on that. Well, look at that.
Hey, defense.
Eyes in the back of my head.
What's 19 doing? Just sauntering over to the play, hands down.
All right, finally, this is dope. To the Japanese B-League. Did I mention there was no NBA last night? Check out the robot draining a shot from just shy of half court, because half court would have been too far for the robot.
Well, no. They've got it perfect.
That's where it was programmed.
Programmed to. This is impressive, man. Build this thing to be able to, they can adjust it where it is on the court, make shots.
How I feel about free throws. It's one shot.
Yeah, Jenna has the hottest of all hot free throw takes that devolved into her saying she could do 100 burpees perfectly after running a marathon.
Another day. Okay. Another day. We'll get to that because there'll be time for it. Another day, another chapter in the Aaron Rodgers saga, Chris Canty. Rodgers' numbers are undeniable. He's the NFL's all-time leader in passer rating and touchdown interception ratio, but nobody really knew he'd be this productive when he spent his first three seasons sitting behind Brett Favre. Favre was asked by TMZ about the recent drama in Green Bay and what he thinks of Aaron's talent.
There's absolutely no doubt that he's probably the most dynamic player in the game right now, maybe ever. What a playmaker. And any coach that will attempt to coach him has to do it, has to tread lightly, because you don't want to take away what he does so well, which is a lot of good things, and handcuffing and say, okay, well, I'm a reining in and I'm going to do this. And I'm not saying Mike did that. I'm not saying that the new coach will do that, but I'm just saying you got to let him play. They really should have won more. For whatever reason, they didn't. They were that good, and they had the best player in the game. I just felt like they should have won more.
Chris, Favre touched on a number of issues there, but let's start with the first one. Is he right there, and Rodgers is the most dynamic player in the game?
Yeah, I don't think that's a situation where you can argue that point. In terms of being a talented quarterback and most skilled quarterback the game has ever seen, yeah, I think that's Aaron Rodgers. I mean, nearly a 4-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. The numbers speak for themselves, but even when you watch him play, you can see his ability to go off schedule and be able to make plays, to extend plays with his legs, and then the arm talent to be able to layer throws and fit it into tight windows. Very few quarterbacks have the skill set that's even come close to what we've seen from Aaron Rodgers. So, yeah, it's impressive to see what he can do at the quarterback position, but you have to ask yourself, why hasn't Aaron Rodgers had the opportunity to compete for more championships? I think there's plenty of blame to go around within the organization, whether it's the coaching staff or their former general manager, Ted Thompson, and not putting the talent around Aaron, not being aggressive in free agency. But I think that the quarterback has to shoulder some of this blame as well, no pun intended. I think some of this has to be on Aaron Rodgers, because the quarterback is the one that sets the standard within the organization, within that locker room. So I look at this situation and say, yeah, Brett Favre has got a point. Aaron Rodgers might well be the most talented quarterback the NFL has ever seen, but Aaron Rodgers, the leader, I don't know. I think it's fair to question what he's done so far in his career.
So I look at, and he's obviously not there yet, but had as good of a debut season as anyone ever has had in the history of the league, Patrick Mahomes. And if we're entering Patrick Mahomes at age 35, and he hasn't suffered any, you know, career-altering injury, and he continues on the trajectory, and I'm a Chiefs fan, and the Chiefs in that span of 13 years have been to one Super Bowl, I'd be disappointed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's fair. Now, obviously, he has to do it longer to get in the Aaron Rodgers category, but he is as talented of a thrower of football, I think, has entered the league since Aaron Rodgers.
Sure.
Andrew Luck right alongside, as far as being able to make every throw, different platforms, instantly being really good like Rodgers was, even though his first year with the Packers, the team wasn't good. You could see, okay, this guy is a special football player. And so does everyone share some of the blame when a team is not as good as it should be? Sure. But do we also, I think, all acknowledge that there hasn't been a single year over the last decade where we're like, man, the Packers squandered that great defense. Where we're like, man, the Packers had this great running game they just refused to utilize. And for some reason, a narrative has been built that Aaron Rodgers wouldn't want them to run the ball mm-hmm. more. Maybe that's true. We won't know that until they have a running game that deserves to be utilized more. We won't know if Aaron Rodgers can play a game management style of quarterback when necessary until he's on a team where it's ever necessary. And mm-hmm. so I think a lot of the criticism about Rodgers has to go to the intangible, and it might be fair, about leadership, about prickliness, about not great with relationships, because on the field, aside from a couple broken collarbones, there's no criticism of him on the field. And on the field, there's plenty of criticism about the schematics coaching-wise, the talent on defense, the way they have passed on a decade of free agency up until recently, and the lack of a consistent running attack.
Favre said something which he tried to walk back a little bit when he said coaches should tread lightly with regards to Aaron Rodgers. Is that touching on a little bit of what you're saying, that the difference between who he is on the field and who he is off the field, and trying to make sure he's in the right headspace for both?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's almost like having any kind of working relationship. You have to be able to have a positive rapport, something where you guys can come together, and the end result being getting the best out of one another. And I just don't necessarily believe that that was the case between Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy during his tenure as head coach in Green Bay. Some of the things that came out in the Bleacher Report article about Aaron Rodgers being resistant to certain scheme things, certain things with the formation, and not wanting to run bunch sets yeah. because he wasn't able to see the potential for blitz clearly from the opposing defenses. Like, all of those things essentially put handcuffs on your coaching staff, and they limit what your offense can evolve into. And so when you hear the reports about how Aaron Rodgers was frustrated with the offense becoming stagnant, or Mike McCarthy not being creative enough to take advantage of his skill set, I think the quarterback has some responsibility in that, because if you're not allowing the head coach to do things that he deems in the best interest of the team and in your best interest, then it's a problem. And so when players see that in the locker room, that can become a big issue. And I think that the guys that have been around that Green Bay Packers franchise the last several years understand that there is a little bit of a strained dynamic between Aaron Rodgers and the coaching staff.
But Aaron Rodgers, and I think we'd all agree, his relationship with Mike McCarthy, or his rigidity when it comes to the types of offense he wants to run, has nothing to do with the 36 points per game their defense has given up on average
right.
in the 7 playoff losses in his career. I don't think it has anything to do with Mike McCarthy, through incredibly conservative start to finish play calling, costing them a chance to go to the Super Bowl in 2014 in that conference championship game against the Seattle Seahawks, and then some bad luck. Brandon Bostic.
I mean, that was the onside kick.
The onside kick, and then also they don't win the coin toss, and the defense mm-hmm. can't get a stop. Like, there are a lot of ways with that exact game plan they win despite the game plan.
Sure.
But there's a lot of ways where, even if they give up the onside kick, they're up 10 still instead of being up 4 at the time, and they win despite it. Rodgers knows how talented he is. And I think he has grown frustrated by the fact that he knows that the way we also know he has media rabbit ears, right?
Mm-hmm.
He records all his interviews that he does. He came out and responded 3 times now to this article. He is I think it's fair to say, a sensitive guy when it comes to his position. He knows, fairly or otherwise, that Dan Marino doesn't ever get discussed as one of as the greatest, even really, I think it's left out of the top five conversation because of the lack of winning. He knows that John Elway, who all of Elway's numbers, all of those things say, okay, this guy was really, really good, but not one of the greats. But he's always discussed as one of the greats because he went to five Super Bowls and won two of them. And I think there's an element of, man, I am going to be judged, and some guys care about this, and I think he's one of them. I'm going to be judged based on things totally out of my control, the defense, the personnel. So the things that are in my control, the offense, let me control it. And so maybe he, because you have so little control when you're not on the field in football, maybe that has made him try to take an outsized control over the offense, and maybe that caused some of the confrontation with Mike McCarthy. But also, I don't think Mike McCarthy evolved with the NFL. I think Mike McCarthy's stuff grew stale. And I think Matt LaFleur, I don't know if Matt LaFleur is going to be good or bad, but I don't think it's going to be stale. I think he's going to add things to the offense that will at least intellectually stimulate Aaron Rodgers.
I don't know how fair it is to criticize Mike McCarthy in that regard. We just don't know what he wanted to do versus what Aaron Rodgers was going out there and executing. So I don't know if we can put that on Mike McCarthy. The one thing I will say, though, when you talk about all the moving parts that Aaron Rodgers has no control over, even in a situation where he's as good as he is, he still needs coaching. I mean, Tom Coughlin had a sign in his office that said, coaching is making men do what they don't want to do so they can become what they want to become. You have to be pushed as a player. You have to be able to grow. You have to be able to learn. It just doesn't feel like Aaron Rodgers was willing to do that under Mike McCarthy. Maybe things will change with Matt LaFleur. We'll have to take a wait-and-see approach. But I don't think it's fair to put all of that on Mike McCarthy in terms of the stagnant play calling.
And then the question then becomes, have the Packers wasted all that talent they've had in Aaron Rodgers? We'll talk about that. Eric Mangini will join us in a little bit. But coming up, should the Lakers keep Luke Walton and Rob Pelinka? Now that Magic is gone, we discuss next on First Things First. Tomorrow on FS1, got some baseball for you. Rockies and Giants at 4 Eastern, followed by Robbie Cano and the Mets taking on Freddie Freeman and the Braves. It's an MLB doubleheader tomorrow on FS1 and the Fox Sports app.
I've decided since I live in New York and I don't have an NL team, I'm going to be a Mets fan.
Okay, there you go.
They need you.
Go against the grain. Too many Yankee fans around here.
I don't know if it's Robbie Cano's Mets. It's probably Pete Alonso's Mets at this point.
There you go.
Back here with Chris Kenny. And Sarah Kustak is joining us, and we are going viral. Tiger Woods fired off a 2-under-70 yesterday during round one of the Masters. Woods sits 4 back from the leaders, and we'll have all eyes on him today, including another GOAT, Tom Brady. Nick, what do you think?
Look at Tom Brady showing some love. Will Tiger be in contention on Sunday? Here's what I know. I know that Tiger has never played the first round of the Masters great. He only has 1 round under 70 in his career at the first round of the Masters.
He gets nervous.
He's nervous. He's never gone on the front nine. The historic Masters they won in 97, the 18 under, he went 40-30. 40 on the front, 30 on the back to get to 70. So this ties for his second best round. He got to 3-under at one point yesterday. Looked like that. He was in the lead. And then Brooks Koepka and DeChambeau had great late in the afternoon rounds.
Yep.
Tiger needs to shoot about a 69 today. I think it'd be fine. And then we'll see what he does Saturday. But I think he's a top 10 guy this weekend. I'm not going to say he's going to win it.
Who do you have?
Tiger.
Okay.
I have Tiger.
Wow.
I'm not
going
to say it, but that's who I put my money on.
I'm just so excited. This weekend, if we have Tiger in contention and the first weekend of the NBA playoffs, oh, my God.
You want to hang out and get lunch on set this weekend?
Oh, my God.
No.
It's me and my wife's anniversary Saturday. It's a bad beat for her.
Wow.
It's a bad beat.
Guys, your AT&T wake-up call. Yesterday, Bleacher Report released their list of the top 50 players in the playoffs. Giannis was first, Harden second, and Steph rounding out the top 3. Sarah Kustak, what do you think? You agree with this list?
Yeah, I like this list. And I like the fact that Giannis is up top. I am riding the Milwaukee Bucks in a Antetokounmpo trade. I think he's going to have a just absolutely phenomenal postseason. And I also think it's important we talk so much about Harden and Giannis and in this MVP conversation to see Steph up there, because I do think if he gets healthy, he's the guy that all eyes are going to be on.
I think Bleacher Report's top 4 was perfect. This is the exact list I would have had it. Now, I had Harden winning MVP this year, but that's a different question.
Yes.
The best player in these playoffs is Giannis, and it gives due respect to Steph and Kevin Durant. Now, they got a little wacky with Jokic being 5th and Bede being outside of the top 7, but I totally agree with this initial ranking.
Yeah, I don't know about Jokic being 5th. He was a ghost when they matched up against the Golden State Warriors last time.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow the Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Yesterday, the Kings extended the contract of general manager Vlade Divac, and his first move after the new deal was firing coach Dave Joerger. Sacramento won 39 games this season, their most since 2006. Nick, what do you make of the Kings' moves?
No matter how dysfunctional your NBA franchise is, thank God for the Kings. Like, who in the world thought the Kings did anything but drastically overachieve this year? They fired Mike Malone a few years ago. He might win Coach of the Year this year for Denver. Now they're firing Dave Joerger, who I like Buddy Hield. I love De'Aaron Fox. But they damn near were a 500 team with those two guys your best players. But, hey, if you can consolidate power around Vlade Divac, Hall of Famer Vlade Divac, wow, mind you, I guess that's something you got to do. Sarah, I was baffled by this.
Well, we had been hearing about friction since before the start of the season, and even when they were in playoff contention, there was still all of that talk. So it doesn't surprise me that something happened, but that's going to be one of the most coveted jobs because they have a young core that exceeded expectations this season. That's a lot of promise.
Sometimes friction gets a bad rap, though. Friction can help you keep accountable. It keeps everybody sharp within an organization. I saw a lot of young players on that Kings team that ascended and got better as the season progressed.
Yeah, look at the Lakers. The wow. latest news. Out of the Lakers organization, is that there won't be any moves out of the Lakers organization, at least not anytime soon. It is being reported that Jeannie Buss has no immediate plans to fire head coach Luke Walton or general manager Rob Pelinka. For a little background, Walton has 50 more losses than wins over his three seasons as the head coach. Nick, do the Lakers need to move on from both Luke Walton and Rob Pelinka?
I read these stories that are coming out of Los Angeles, and I can't believe it. The Lakers might let Luke Walton outmaneuver them. Like, Luke Walton be a hot candidate for that opening Kings job. Like, oh, well, if other people want him, then we, what is happening? Like, what, first of all, a little vindication for Magic here, because these leaks still coming. Magic's not there anymore. So everyone's like, oh, we get tight ship here in Los Angeles. Magic was just talking to everybody. Okay, well, the leaks are still coming. Mm-hmm. Why would you put any message out other than this? Our entire focus is in filling our vacant president of basketball operations job. We think it is the best job in all of sports. You get to run the Los Angeles Lakers, and you inherit a team with the best player in the world. And we are going to hire the best person possible. And anyone else in the organization, their future will be determined by that person. Why are you adding in prerequisites that might make the best person available say, well, so if I come there, I don't have the flexibility with my own coach. And I'm not saying Rob Pelinka needs to be fired. Mm. I'm saying that needs to be a decision for the person they hire. I am saying Luke Walton needs to be fired, but I also think whomever they hire would come to that conclusion. I don't understand how the Lakers could possibly be taking what was, even though it was awkward, a gift given to them by Magic Johnson, which is an opportunity to reset how this franchise is being run, and have the response be, no, you know what? We think this year went pretty well, and we just want to run it back. I don't understand it.
Well, and I also, my hope is that the reason why, and I differ in my opinion of Luke Walton with you. I think that he has been under very challenging circumstances in these first few seasons, so we haven't got a true chance to see what type of coach he is. I believe that he can be a very good coach in the NBA, but that aside, I am hoping that Jeannie Buss and the decision to keep Pelinka and Walton where they're at right now is just to keep the organization running during the time being. They've got draft workouts coming up. There's things organizationally you need to do during this time period so you have people in place that can get those things done. To your point, Nick, I 100% agree that this job, this is going to be the bit. We talk so much about free agency. Who's going to come to Lakers in free agency? To me, it's not about that. Who are you going to hire to entirely put this organization back in line? And they should have free reign to hire whoever they want, mm-hmm. to have their people in. Think about how much we talked about throughout the course of the season. Well, it's not their people. And I think one of the underrated things, and I'll include myself in this boat, we talk so much about Walton not being Rob Pelinka and Magic's guy. Well, Pelinka, clearly, as Magic had stated, was not his
Magic's guy.
Mm-hmm. And so it is about hiring the best candidate out there. And I do think that you could look at those that are currently in positions now. Don't hold yourself to just people who are available.
Of course.
They can entice others that are in positions.
Well, you got to bring in competent people to work in the front office. I mean, Rob Pelinka didn't have much experience working in the front office. He worked with front offices and getting player contracts done. He was Kobe agent. And so that's why Jeannie Buss has that longstanding relationship with him. But you talked about the offseason starting for the Lakers and how much work that needs to be done. I'm right there with Nick. I think the priority for the Lakers absolutely has to be finding who the next team president is going to be and then empowering them and giving them the autonomy to hire the people that they want in the building, working with them, and they can build this team and according to their vision. I don't think it's a situation where you can let Rob Pelinka and Luke Walton stay around and go through player evaluations and go through the offseason and then at some point, whether it's after the draft or after free agency, decide you're going to move on from them. I think that's too late at that point. I think this organization needs a drastic change. They have to pivot. This was a failed season, no matter how you look at it. And I think they've got to go out there and find somebody that they can trust, empower that individual to make the decisions to move them into the future.
And here's the thing. I want to be fair to Rob Pelinka. I don't know if Rob Pelinka is good or bad at this job because I don't know what the separation of powers was between Magic and Pelinka. Like, was Rob Pelinka just quietly behind the scenes saying, Magic, we need shooters? And Magic says, no, we're doing it the right way. Or was Rob fully on board? Because the way Magic and Rob presented their relationship is, we both get up at 5 a.m., we call each other, we're best buds. That clearly was a lie. That clearly they were not hand-in-glove relationship-wise. Mm-hmm. But you can make a case, Rob Pelinka. Somebody drafted Kyle Kuzma 27th. Somebody drafted Josh Hart 30th. Those were good draft picks.
Yes.
And so somebody does need to get credit for that. On the Luke Walton front, I am not saying Luke Walton won't one day be a good head coach. What I am saying is this. If they run it back with Luke and just elevate Pelinka, are they doing anything differently that as an organization that they would be doing if LeBron didn't sign there? If LeBron didn't sign there and they just had this young core and Magic resigned, then I think you could make the argument, hey, this year was hurt by injuries. We're going to keep it going. You cannot treat this situation as if there isn't the elephant in the room, which is you have the LeBron James with a couple years left of MVP caliber play. And what do we do to maximize it? To your point about going after guys that are in current positions, Mark Stein reported they'd go after Bob Myers. Mm-hmm. There could be a bonus in that. I don't think Klay Thompson's realistic, but maybe he is as a free agent if Bob Myers comes. You brought up Jerry West. I think that's a tough sell, but if you get him, maybe that weakens Kawhi Leonard's want to go to the Clippers. I brought up Masai Ujiri. I know that would weaken Kawhi Leonard's want to stay with the Raptors. There are people in positions that we know can do the job. There's David Griffin sitting out there who we know can do the job.
Mm-hmm. So there are guys who can help begin the domino effect of all the needs that the Lakers have, but status quo is not the right answer. Status quo doesn't get you any of the things, the shooters, the free agent, the coach, any of those
things. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you brought up the word trust. More than it, when you look at organizations in the infrastructure of front offices that are successful, it is about trust, and that's not just about two guys getting along. We always hear this when you hear about R.C. Buford and Greg Popovich, about how the beauty of their relationship is their synergy, but also that they will disagree with one another. And they will have different perspectives, different opinions. It's a collaborative effort amongst the entire group and entire front office. And that, I think, is what you need when it comes to, that's when people say having their own people. Mm-hmm. It's not just, oh, this is my buddy. And I like him, and I like to be at work with him.
You have an established working relationship, and you know you can believe in and rely on the other
person. The only good thing to come out of all this is that we get stories for days and days and days. All right, let's move on to the Warriors now, who begin their road to a three-peat this weekend against the Clippers. Golden State favored by 12.5 in Game 1, while also remaining the overwhelming betting favorites to win it all. Why? Well, for one, Warriors are 32-6 over the past two postseasons. Also, Curry, Clay, KD, Dre, and a little Boogie. Nick, who do you think has the best chance to knock off the Warriors?
That's an amazing number, what you just said there. I was fact-checking you in my head. I was 32-6? They lost three games to the Rockets. Yeah, 32-6.
Yeah.
That's the – I mean, I've said on the show a bunch of times the only team to take them past five games was the Rockets. But yeah, to put it in that context, I saw them prompter. I said 32-6. Well, what, since the All-Star break? That can't be right. That's unbelievable. Right. So for a team that's only lost six times in 2 years, can a team beat them four times in seven games? That's the question. Who's the biggest threat? The only team, to me, that's threatened them this whole run. It's Houston.
Mm-hmm.
It's been Houston. It will continue to be Houston. I think the people in Houston, while if they're being totally honest, wanted the two seed. And, of course, just like everyone in the Western Conference playoffs, they were hoping wherever they landed, they'd be matched up against the Clippers, not the Thunder, not the Spurs, not the Jazz. But the silver lining to the Rockets facing the Warriors in the second round, if I just advance them past Utah, is one of the fair knocks on James Harden, there's a lot of unfair knocks, is he has worn down as playoffs have gone on. Mm. And now you will be getting your most important series 2 weeks earlier, 5 to 7 games earlier than you got it last year. You won't be getting it in middle of May. You will be getting it in the very beginning of May. And so that, I think, could benefit them. And if you're going to beat the Warriors, you need some luck. You need one of the things that helped the Rockets last year was Iggy got dinged, and that was a big moment in that series that kind of got forgotten. You need to have one of those 23-plus three-point nights. You need to have a night where Steph just goes cold or KD goes cold. But the Rockets are the only team, to me, that have more than a puncher's chance, that can look at the Warriors eye-to-eye, player-for-player, and say, we know what we want to do here, we know what we want to do here, we know what we want to do here, and they know they can win an Oracle in the playoffs, which almost nobody in the league knows other than them.
Well, I would say, you want to make it clear that I do, Golden State, I think, is head and shoulders above everyone. So when we talk about teams that have a chance, I think it's, you know, these are teams that have the best chance. I would say Houston, I believe, has the best chance in the West to knock off the Warriors, but if we are talking about the entire NBA, I think whoever comes out of the East has the best chance to beat the Warriors. And I'm picking the Milwaukee Bucks to come out of the East. I think when you look at Milwaukee, the way they've matched up against Golden State throughout the course of this season, even going back to last season, but they've made a tremendous leap. Their versatility, the way in which we talk so much about positionless basketball, and that started with Golden State, that is what Milwaukee brings. I think they have depth. You got a star in Giannis Antetokounmpo who can take over games at certain points, and I think also what they've done defensively is impressive in understanding you need to slow down the Warriors, but more than anything, it's about can you score with this team?
Yep.
And I do believe with the added three-point shooting of the Bucks, I think they have the best chance to knock off Golden State.
The one thing I will say about the Bucks, and I love everything that they've done, Budenholzer and Giannis Antetokounmpo, the year that he's had. I mean, he's my MVP. I know, Nick, you think it's James Harden, but they've impressed me this entire season. But there is something to be said for having experience in the postseason. And Milwaukee doesn't necessarily have the best track record and the most experience of these teams. The game changes once we get into the postseason. In professional sports, no matter what sport we're talking about, it changes a little bit. The intensity ratchets up because there's more urgency. It's win or go home. You know, the depth doesn't necessarily come into play as much because you don't have back-to-backs. So I think this is a situation where you have to look at the team that has the players that can have an impact and dictate the complexion of the game, but also the team that has the experience and the grit in the postseason. And to me, that's the Houston Rockets.
See, I actually look at that the opposite way. I know Milwaukee has not gotten out of the first round, but they went to seven games last season against the Boston Celtics. The previous 2 years, I think the first year they got in the playoffs, they got knocked out by Chicago. Mm-hmm. The second year, it was a hard-fought 6 or 7-game series against Toronto, and it's the same core of players. So you've got Giannis Antetokounmpo, you got Chris Middleton, now Eric Bledsoe in a second. It's the same group of guys.
They've been together and they've been into the playoffs multiple years. They just don't have the history and experience of success.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because of when the Bucks would have to play the Warriors, that I think the Bucks have the profile of every not just good NBA champion, great NBA champion. Mm-hmm. They have the profile of a team that most years is the big favorite. You have the league MVP, even if I would have been a close vote, but I wouldn't have voted for him, but he's going to win it. You have a top three offense. You have the number one defense. You have depth. You have an excellent coach. You have an amazing home court advantage. You are 15-5 as a team against the next seven best teams or six best teams in the league. Mm-hmm. They check every box. But the Warriors, by the time they play the Bucks, if that is the matchup, they will have 6 weeks of playoff mode. They, you know what, they will be fully, now an injury changes things obviously, but they will have been fully engaged, and I think they will have to have played their best basketball to get past Houston. One of the things that I think works in Houston's favor is the Warriors clearly are a team that has a switch and can flip it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tough. Usually you flip it by the conference finals, and that's what happened last year and took them a bit. And then come the NBA finals, Cavs were overmatched, but the Warriors were also playing their best basketball. The Warriors aren't even going to have to turn the switch on in the first round of the playoffs because they didn't draw OKC. They didn't draw the Spurs. So are they going to be fully locked in round one so they are hitting the ground running in round two? Or could it be a series where Houston steals game one and now they have home court back? Now, mm-hmm. I agree with you. The Warriors are the drastic favorite as they've been all year. And I don't know that the Rockets would beat the Bucks in the finals if they get there, because I think the Bucks are as good as you're talking about. But to beat the Warriors, I think you need experience against them, and you need to be able to hit, you know, 14 threes in a quarter, and the Rockets can do that.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. And catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.